No, it would not. It would not be Mr. Price, because what you have done is that you have made a look at the Senate. You have made a look at a non-functioning area, and you've put a functioning area. I am one who believes
you're saying that,
that
the Senate is not functioning.
Okay, I'm saying that the Senate is at the receiving end. The Senate makes the decision and sends it on. I'm of the belief that when I look at the transition of Barbados through the years, and I realize that the local government system of Barbados work, the removal of local government was a political choice. Because when we had the local government in Barbados, we realized that the system, political system, was a challenge to the then government, because you could not have had a local government which has the support of the opposition, which was the Barbados Labour Party then. And this is why the local government was removed. It was demised for political reasons, but it was functioning. It truly was functioning, the vestry system. You're not going back for the vestry system. But here you have a government who has introduced councils. Councils will not work, because when you look at the setup of the councils, you look up at the setup of the councils in every ward, in every constituency, and then you've got somewhere along the line that each of these ministers have got what you call a personal assistant to work. So this is cutting back on that expenditure. This is truly making it work in terms of people at the lower level within the various areas. And I'm hoping that a future government of Barbados will look at cutting back on the spend power of the parliament, introduce a system which is less of local government, give the people an authority to be there for the development of the country. That is one. I also believe, Mr. Price, that a future Barbados means that somewhere along the line, that all Barbadians, regardless of the race, white, blue, black, pink, that there should be at least given, there should be no Barbadian that has a privilege over other Barbadians. That all of us, for example, we are seeing a Barbados where there are beneficiaries. There are beneficiaries of an economy that we all should be beneficiary of, but a selected few are beneficiaries of this economy. I would like to see a future Barbados where every person in this country can benefit as a Barbadian. You could be pink, as I just said. I don't want to see a Barbados where you have favoritism. Favoritism in the political system of this country, because a person or persons believe within themselves that they got a right to enter a party from the bottom, get to the top, and disadvantage those people who were, through the process of time, directing and bringing that party to the point of success.
But so Mark, that is a human thing, isn't it? I mean,
it isn't a human thing. It's a choice of the political system of Barbados, Mr. Price. I am telling you that we have seen the transformation of politics in Barbados that has gone from ordinary politics to commercial politics to a mercantilized type of politics. So what? It is not a choice. It is not. It is something that has been adopted and accepted. Back in 1981, Mr. Price, we saw the introduction of commercial politics in a certain area. I am not saying it shouldn't work, but I'm saying that they're party faithful. There are party faithful who ran and waved for the success of whichever party it is that are truly overlooked. And that is not the system. That is not the system. And I want to say this, that any political party that comes to power in this day and age must think of the persons or persons who found themselves as voices. And don't let's come to a situation where beneficiaries are people who come from behind and work themselves to a position of control.
All right, Mark. Well, thank you for your contribution. We got to take a break here now for the latest. And ladies and gentlemen, we're looking forward to having you back with us. As I said, we're looking at what concerns you the most about what's happening in Barbados and how we can fix it. We'll take a break for the latest.
You do not have to be a roofing expert to know that a metal sheet will rust where it is joined. That is one reason why the beautiful Permaclad U-Panel and R-Panel roof sheet sold at Williams Metals will outlast other roofing materials. Permaclad, colorclad, and corrugated sheets are cut to the exact length that you will need, up to 40 feet and even longer. That means no joints from ridge to eave. Colorclad sheets come with a factory painted finish in white, blue, green, red, brown, and yellow, and are fitted with screws for added resistance, tested to withstand high winds up to 130 miles an hour. Get a rail roof supplied at competitive prices, delivered to you today from Williams Metals. Simply call Williams at Kane Garden St. Thomas 425-2000 or Lowlands Christ Church 428-1500.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
And welcome back to Brass Tack Sunday. Sanka Price here with you. Dennis Johnson in the chair. With me in the studio is Dr. Colin Alert. And we're focusing on what concerns you the most about what's happening in Barbados and how we can fix it. Dr. Alert, you were talking before the break about obesity, the need for programs and whatnot. What I'm wondering about here relates to the thousands of tourists who come to Barbados, because I was making the point at the start of the program that right now in Bridgetown, there are scores of tourists just walking up and down, and they have nothing to go and spend their money on. And even Parliament, I saw a man trying to shoot a picture between the railings because Parliament's offices are closed, the museum in there is closed. Anyway, let me get to the point. Is there any linkage at all between what we serve in the hotels in terms of local foods and the nutrition that these foods have and what is actually being offered to guests? Because we import so much food. And you would have heard agronomist Dr. Francis Chan in particular making the point that we import a lot of unnecessary foods.
Yeah, good question. Last Saturday, there was a seminar put on in Queen's Park Steelshed by the University of the West Indies as part of the 70th anniversary celebrations. And there was a focus on nutrition. And basically, among the other points that came out, is that we sort of don't have any particular guidance in nutrition. And unfortunately, we have sort of very much adopted Western-type diets. You know, so in our hotels and so on, you know, we focus on fake steaks and fried chicken and fries and so on. And there seems to be significant neglect of local cuisine, you know, whether it's the black-bellied sheep, whether it's our local fruits and vegetables. So it's, you know, it's a problem both into, well, it's an issue, both in terms of what we offer to our tourists and as well what we offer to ourselves. And unless we adopt, you know, within ourselves, you know, a greater appreciation of what we have and make better use of what we have, and then, in addition, introduce to our tourists, we wouldn't get anywhere. You know, so it's all well and good, the tourists come in here and ordering a New York steak, you know, a 12-ounce New York steak, but we should offer them black-bellied sheep, you know, and we should have outlets. You know, not that offer fried chicken and fries and burgers and hot dogs, you know, but much more of a local cuisine. And especially, again, the fruits and vegetables need to be pushed a lot more.
Because what I'm thinking here is that if we have a situation where the tourists are exposed more to what we do, that, you know, it would help us in terms of our export market, especially the foods that we can export. Like, for example, we do a lot of that, of course, with our beverages. I speak here about our Golden Sunshine, our rum, okay? But black-bellied sheep, I mean, you know, they're exported all over the place. So if people can get accustomed to that taste that and the way it's prepared, that would help us, certainly.
Yeah, I agree. What I say is we need ourselves to adopt it and then push it out, you know, but we're sort of right now going the opposite route. We can adopt what other people have pushed on us.
That is very true. Anyhow, we go back to the phone lines and we have another invitee, and she's a woman of great principle. She's the president of the Barbados Investors and Policy Holders. I'm speaking of June Fowler. June, are you there?
Hi, good afternoon, Sanka.
You're on the air. Thank you very much. I know we were supposed to call you much earlier, but I want to hear from you. What are your concerns about what's happening in Barbados and how we could fix the challenges that we face?
Well, thank you, Sanka, for finding me worthy even to be on your program today to make a contribution. I've been listening to the discussion throughout the afternoon, and two things concern me: the moral decay of the fabric of our society, the fact that there's a lot of anger and aggression that we are seeing not only among our young people, and I think it is has escalated within the past couple of weeks, again, because of social media, and we're able to see it now, and the fact that we're able to see it and see what's happening among our school children, I could just imagine what our teachers are having to endure on a daily basis. But the moral fabric of our society is really a concern for me. And the other thing is how productivity in the workplace is impacted because we are still not able to pay our drivers, renew our driver's license online. There are a lot of things that we do within the government that we pay that we have to go and stand in queues. And we're not able yet to do these things online. And if I have to step out, some people do it in their lunch hours, some people do it at different times. And what we have found is that sometimes it takes you away from your workplace for 2 hours. And just imagine this happening throughout the island at different points in time. How can we have high levels of productivity when the systems are not in place yet to accommodate the things that we need to do that only happens during working hours?
Very interesting. And the thing about it is that that is one of the main things that people continue to speak about, the fact that we need to get our systems right. I remember Minister Don Van Innes was made the point about 2 years ago, at least, talking about 24-hour Barbados. Yeah. And but what moves that have been made since then, I'm not quite sure. Because it's really truly about getting the systems in place that would make this possible. And I don't think much of that seems to have been done.
Not much has happened, because if I have to see my dentist, I have to see my doctor, it has to be between Monday to Friday, and sometimes between 7:30 and 2 or 7:30 and 3. And those are productive work hours that I'm having to take off to have an appointment. No, I'm not saying that your doctors shouldn't have their weekends off, but a system should be in place where we can do some of these things after hours, let's say between 5 o'clock and 7. And so this is something that has bothered me for a while, the fact that so much time is taken away from us and from the workplace in having to conduct what seems to be a normal part of business. And doing personal stuff in Barbados.
We got a doctor in the house here. Let me ask him the question. Why can't doctors, especially in the private sector, work in a shift system in such a way that they would come to work maybe from 12, so they go from 12 to 9, instead of working from morning, so that people have to come to see them in mornings? What do you think about that?
Well, some of them do. But I think what we've seen very recently, and it's instructive, is what happened at the Black Rock Polyclinic, where due to violence and some bad boys and so, the nurses were forced to curtail the extended hours after 4 o'clock because of violence. And I think, I know one emergency clinic in Belleville had that problem a couple of years ago, where they stopped their service 24 hours at midnight because, again, of violence and somebody came in and robbed the place. So security in particular and working late hours is a challenge for doctors, and you also as well, we tend to have more female doctors now than before. You know, they outnumber the male doctors by far. And you can't have your young females working late hours at night in a place where you're very, very concerned about security.
I have to agree with that. And this is where my other concern is. We talk about the moral decay of the fabric of our society because of the level of anger and aggression and violence within the communities. We have a situation where, as the doctor says, these health facilities now have to close early for the protection of staff and so on. But one of the things, I don't know if we're recognizing it as a people, that, and from my work, what I do in terms of working with women, women's groups, and even within the church, and a number of years ago working with the Poverty Alleviation Committee, come to recognize that we have a lot of working poor in our society. We have a lot of people who are hurting and suffering in silence because we as a people do not like to share information, share our private information. We're not a society that will go to counseling. We may have this new generation that will seek to do that, but we tend to suffer in silence. And what we have seen is the anger and aggression being translated into the workplace because people are so stressed. They are underpaid, they are overtaxed, and some people are holding down 2 jobs, and after paying their rent, and after paying their utilities, there is basic money left to buy little foodstuff. And if you're feeding three children, and usually these are especially mainly these single mothers who are having to help to work with these kids. So we see the children going to school, and all that is happening in the home is being taken into the school. So that anger and that aggression and that frustration, we're seeing it in the workplaces. And I think sometimes when you sit and we speak to these people on a one-on-one, we recognize that there's an underlying problem. And that problem is stress. That problem is the fact that they do not know how to make ends meet. And I do not believe that we need to recreate the wheel. There are a lot of organizations and a lot of groups within Barbados that have already been offering assistance to people like these. But sometimes people don't know where to go or how to seek assistance. And I think that it is creating to another level of illness. Now, we speak about mental illness, and sometimes we see mental illness as, you know, the old-time days of people going off mad. But there are people in our workplaces who are mentally ill and silently and quietly not speaking or sharing it with anybody because they don't want to be stigmatized. So to me, all of that is filtering into the society and causing a breakdown of the moral fabric.
Mm. And I agree with you totally because I see too much of that myself. Someone here on the WhatsApp is saying, good afternoon, Sanka. Flexi hours would solve that problem, as well as the traffic problem, by the way. And again, that is something I believe in if we're talking about a 24-hour work system, because I think at some point that has to come into play. I think we've been talking a little too much in Barbados and not actually implementing some of the ideas that we speak of. Certainly,
Sanka, we have implementation deficit syndrome in this country.
In a very serious way.
Yes. I mean, I've heard so much talk about the 24-hour work system. I've heard about the shift system. I've heard about staggered work hours. And, again, you spend 45 minutes to an hour trying to get your children to school and get to work. And by the time you reach the workplace, you are so stressed that you need another 45 minutes sometimes to relax and get your head around what you need to do. And again, it translates into the society and it creates that anger and that aggression. You see it on the highway, how people are driving, how people are behaving. And I am fearful for Barbados that we in the next 5-10 years will not be able to look another person in the eye for a couple seconds before that person lashing out and hitting at you because of you looking at them, maybe not even in a way that is to cause them harm, but maybe just a glance because there's so much anger.
So, what would you suggest the ways that we can deal with any of these situations that you speak of? Just give us one or two suggestions.
I believe that I know we always go back to the church. I believe the church has a role to play, and I believe that, you know, not speaking about the establishment of the church. I'm thinking about us, the body of Christ, the people, because in each workplace, in each school, in every home, there's somebody who is a part of the body of Christ. And I believe that we need to take the role that we play seriously in trying to help. Each one can teach one. I believe that the work that we do, that I do with some of the women's groups, that others do with the women's groups, if we are able to help the mothers, if we're able to help them to see how they can manage their households, how they can manage the children's situation, how we see the situation with the father. When he couldn't deal with the Princess Margaret daughter, he sent her to the junior liaison scheme program. Perhaps we can have more programs like that where we can have more children enrolled in those programs, where if the discipline is not being done in the household, that other groups and organizations can help. Sanka, we have so many groups in Barbados that are already effective and are doing a good work. And I think we just need to let that information be known. And it can be known within the schools so that children can take home literature for their parents. It can be done throughout the communities. The same way during election time, we do mailbox drops, that we can also do mailbox drops so that parents know how we can help them, that they're not alone, they're not struggling with the difficulties that we're experiencing now in life, because it is not an individual thing. A lot of us are going through those difficulties.
You talk about elections and we're talking about moral decay, and we know from a year or so ago, 2 years ago, that this election be fought on morality. And I know that, of course, that you have been attacked, you know, personally as well on a political platform. So you know how difficult that can be.
Yeah.
What are some of the things you would like to see for this coming election?
I would like to see the issues being focused on. I really, 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 Sanka, would like to see all the nasty talk and the dirty talk. Yes, there's nothing wrong in having some humor and having some comedy, but it can be clean. And the getting down in the gutter and the talk like that, our young people are hearing it. Our young people are seeing it. And if they see the adults setting these kind of examples, what do we expect them to do? When they have to deal with a situation or deal with another person, they're going to be using some of the same language and some of the same tactics that we see. So I think it's time for the lies to stop being told. It is time for the nasty conversations and the digging into people's backgrounds, in their parents' backgrounds and everything. The minute as you step on that political platform, all of a sudden you, your family and everybody else connected with you are exposed and the dirty linen is spread. We're not interested in that. Tell me how we are going to turn around the economy in Barbados. Tell me how we're going to raise the level of unemployment. Tell me how we're going to help the people who work in the retail sector who may be taking home only, $300 a week minus NIS. Tell me how are we going to do things to help these individuals to live a better and more comfortable life.
Mm-hmm. June Fowler, thank you so very much. And ladies and gentlemen, that is the final invitee that I had, but we have a number of calls and we really want to hear from you. We go straight to the phone lines. Remember, this program finishes at 1:15 today. It's now 12:57, so we've got at least 17, 18 minutes to go. You're on the air. Good afternoon. Go right ahead.
So many of my favorite public officials on the air today. So many. Favorite entrepreneur, favorite female voice, Peter Laurie. I think she may call him moderator because his voice is so clear, crystal clear. A number of them and making very good comments. Of course, once it's a Williams there, he will be saying something that you like and he will say something you do not like. First thing that he did say that was not so good was the fact that public servants probably do hold up private business and stuff, which may very well be true. But, when you tend to lump businesses together in Barbados as just businesses, private sector, that's probably where the problem comes. I believe many of us believe that private sector should be more concerned now with earning foreign exchange in Barbados as opposed to just exploiting Barbadian needs. And yeah, they provide income, they provide jobs and stuff, but at the end of the day, you're still exploiting Barbadians. So maybe that is what the public service are seeing and responding to. But he, having said that, he also said something that was pretty much, to my mind, the solution to everything that we are faced with, and that is the business of governance. Ms. Fowler was asked just now what she would like to see happen, to make a difference. And yeah, she gave her opinion. But I think it's not implementation deficit. I think if people benefit from the way things are, there will be actually no need to have anything changed, because they are actually earning from it. And they are thriving in a very, unsavory condition for most of us, but they seem to be thriving in it and so on. What needs to happen is exactly what Mr. Williams said. It should make headline news. He said that he does not support private campaign financing. Now, if you understand that financing of a political party is a kind of bribe, it is the bedrock of the entire political business in Barbados. And if that could be somehow addressed, all of the other issues will go away. In fact, I'd like to say perhaps that if somehow it was made quite clear that all the private sector would like to have the government, the political parties financed through the Treasury, I put it to you that both major political parties will disappear. Because their business model will vanish with that. Once there's a business entity, a business end, you're going to have problems. And if the private sector is very... You see, the problem with the financing is that we have a Chinese company in Barbados now that is owned by the government of China. And the Barbadian construction companies are forced to go through the same... They can go through the same process as the Barbadian construction companies. That is, that they can put in... They can finance campaigns like anybody else and expect to get a return on that kind of investment. Mm-hmm. The problem is that any responsible government, and the Chinese construction company is owned by the Chinese government, their responsibility is to its people, not to employ like Kowilis will employ Barbadians and engineers and stuff. The Chinese government is in the same way that any construction company, including Williams, because he's involved in electrical, that's construction as well. And that, you know, allowing for financing of these political parties by government, even though it's indirect, but it's still a government financing it. And that's where the problem now has become. So if it is that campaign financing cannot be held as a serious part of the agenda going forward into this election, then we're only wasting time. You have a Barbadian parliament coming up on Tuesday, what do you call it, a VOB parliament or whatever it's called. At some People's point, you have parliament. To discuss. Yeah, you're going to have to discuss this campaign financing because Mr. Williams himself is an engineer. And he could see other major engineers sitting down there twiddling their fingers while the Chinese engineers get all the turnkey jobs and stuff because the Chinese construction company can bid like any other construction company in Barbados, even though they're funded by the Chinese government. This campaign financing has to be taken care of, seriously. And that is what I would like to say. I don't think Mr. Williams could disagree with that. Thank you.
All right, sir. Thank you very much. WhatsApp message here says, what you all are talking about is called life. It has stresses. It's not all happy, calm, and glorious. Cities have this. We have it on a small scale. Another message says, Ms. Fowler is correct about the anger that is pervading our society. I experience it regularly on the roads of Barbados. People cursing and threatening you for simple traffic situations. The country is overstressed from the school children to working adults. We need to do something before it gets any worse. We go back to the phone lines. It's 1:02 p.m. We finish at 1:15. Good afternoon. This is Brasstack Sunday.
Good afternoon, Sanka.
Hi, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm good. Fantastic conversation you all are having today. Now, while I agree with virtually everything that has been said in terms of stating what is, I think everybody's making a fundamental mistake. And that is, we are not accepting the fact that Barbados is a tiny country. It is a tiny country. There are farms that are bigger than this country. And we have this idea of the separation of us and them. That there's something called government, and they're them, and there's something called a private sector, which is separate from government. I make no such distinction. Because I think fundamentally, I think everything is so interwoven, so tightly interwoven, you cannot separate them. You cannot look at the problem that we have in this country without acknowledging the fact that one sector influences the other. Okay, one thing influences the other. All the problems we have are intertwined. You have to ask yourself the question, why if we have so many educated people in this country, so many knowledgeable people, the people on your panel are knowledgeable, and they are articulate, and they have expressed concerns that have been around for decades. Why does it remain so? Why has it not changed? Why has the status quo remained the same way? And the simple answer to that is because it benefits certain people in certain positions of power, whenever or whoever they get into those positions of power, to keep people in the dark, to keep people separated. So when we had a situation, let's say in the 60s or 40s or whatever, when you had a need from local government, with the simple reason that somebody functions, things that happen in St. Lucie, something happened in St. Lucie, nobody knew what was going on in St. Michael. And the time it takes to communicate information back and forth or whatever and get systems in place, technologically it was not feasible. Now we have a situation where we have technology. Now we have a situation where we have systems that that command and controversy the entire country and that have to be applied across the entire country. And they're not being applied. They're not working. Sanitation. Right? The fact that we can't get trucks to service an entire country. Okay? The coordination of those activities. So we have to ask the question, why? Okay?
So you tell us why.
Just a second. The the doctor was speaking with respect to obesity. Okay? Now, let me link that there to the economy. Because you have a situation, you have said, Mr. Williams has said, oh, well, we want more people to, let's say, be entrepreneurs. Just off the top of the thing. Okay? Now, the easiest way for people to become entrepreneurs, to do things for themselves that you find in Barbados, is a cook. So, therefore, people, everybody starts up having put up a little something outside the house and be cooking fast food, fried foods. So, therefore, you have more people now have patronizing those people. They're getting fatter because they ain't cooking at home anymore. Okay? They're eating the fried foods. And then you have the obesity problem. So all these things are linked together.
And sir, what is the solution?
What the solution is?
Yeah.
The solution, first and foremost, is discussion. The solution is that whichever administration comes into power, one of the first things I would like them to do is to focus on saying, okay, how can I put places in Barbados, structures in Barbados, assembly points in Barbados, throughout Barbados, where everybody can go to and sit down and discuss things. So in short, to do that, you also have to have a transportation system that allows people to participate. Okay? So therefore, these are the things that you need to begin to focus on. How we've been talking about, we want to get people involved in the discussion. So therefore, you have to put the structures that allow them to get involved in that discussion. And you then have to accept the fact as well that the biggest problem we have in Barbados is the corruption. And Mr.
Well, where is the evidence of that?
I will deal with that there in coming week, okay? Because Barbados is an open secret. So don't, when people say that there's no corruption or whatever, and there's no evidence, that I don't go with that sort of thing.
No, I ask you, where is the evidence?
It's not for me to cover the evidence, it's for the police to gather that. We know quite well that every year we have the report from the Auditor General, or whoever it is, and it says it identifies a whole bunch of different things.
Infelicities, it identifies a number of them. Ayo, sir, thank you very much. I really want to get one more call in. It's 1:08, and we go back to the phone lines. Good afternoon. This is Brastack Sunday.
Good afternoon, Mr. Price.
Good afternoon, sir.
Yeah, I must commend you for asking two good questions. Where is the evidence, one? And what constitutional crisis? Two good questions. And as they came to you, you readily up. What constitutional crisis? That's the gem I spoke early in the program, and you've just asked, where's the evidence? Two proper questions. But let me hear something to say to you, sir. You see, all of this talk about constitutional crisis and all this 3 months grace time and all of this. I'm going to ask you one question. You would ever stop to think that something like this could be so wrong, so out of place, and all the legal luminaries, the constitutional lawyers, what have you, would allow that to prevail, and don't say, hey, Pooh, stop with it right there.
Well, sir, you know, the thing about it is that even if, to my mind, there is no, as I ask the question, there's no constitutional crisis per se. Is the law is in place? It can happen. Should it be happening? Is the real question that needs to be asked. And for me, quite frankly, what I am concerned about during this 90-day period, and I've said it ad nauseum, is what is really happening with our foreign reserves, because they're going down at this time. And they have been, the trajectory is that they're going towards zero. And therefore, and we don't know up to date what the situation is. So the problem is, if we don't know what is happening, if the government is not saying what is happening, then one day we can wake up and find that there's a change in our value of our dollar. And that is not being extremist or being alarmist, because I've seen that happen. That happened in Trinidad. So I know what I'm talking about here. So therefore, I am concerned about that. But in terms of constitutional crisis, there's no constitutional crisis. The Constitution provides for this 90-day period. The Prime Minister has made that quite plain. But even, but despite that, the fact about the matter is that, you know, the law is there. Well, we lost that call. Oh, okay. We'll try to get one more call in. It's now 1:11. Go right ahead.
Afternoon, Sanka.
Yes, go right ahead. You have 4 minutes.
Yes. Okay. What is
you're on the speakerphone. There's a bad echo.
All right, hold on.
Gotta be quick. It's 1:11. This is one. I would like to suggest that VOB has another program such as this. I believe that it is useful to hear from those thinkers from among us other than the politicians. Hopefully we get some new ones who are prepared to listen, learn, and implement. And sir or madam, I don't know who wrote this, but yes, these are the type of programs that we're trying to bring to help inform Barbadians. I think the more discussion that we have, the better informed that we become. Sir, are you back there as yet?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Yes, good. Yes, go right ahead.
One of the greatest disappointments I had as a manufacturer is the failure by the hotel sector to assist the manufacturing sector. And I say that because this is one sector that the government focused on in the last 10 years was the hoteliers. They gave them almost everything that they wanted. And at one time they said that they got more than the bargain for. Yet the hotel sector persists in importing stuff that is manufactured right here in Barbados while we go under. And if they had stimulated the manufacturing sector, I find that we would have saved a lot of foreign exchange, because a lot of the foreign exchange goes out to purchase things for the hotels that are manufactured here. Now, this is a sector that the government spends over $100 million a year in advertising for. If we as small business people want to advertise our business, we've got to fork out the money. Go and get a loan and fork out the money to advertise. And I cannot see why the hotel sector cannot reciprocate and assist the country, help save foreign exchange, help create jobs. You know, and sometimes it's only it's hard on the government if they have done so much. The government can't always give jobs directly, but it tries to stimulate the economy by stimulating the private sector. And after it's given so much to these people, mm-hmm. they just look at you and disregard you.
Yeah.
You don't want to provide no help at all for the manufacturing sector. And why is this so, Sanka?
Well,
No,
I was going to say that I agree with you that if government is giving so much, then the least that the hoteliers can do is to work with the manufacturers. But you see, it's all part of a comprehensive plan. And my concern that happens in Barbados is that there doesn't seem to be a comprehensive plan. In other words, if you're going to be giving concessions to the hotels, if you are going to be saying to them, look, your job is to earn as much foreign exchange as possible, we will help you, we'll put incentives in place to help to make things easier for you to survive, then at the same time, the government should be saying, but you know, you also have to look first at local manufacturers. You have to look first at local agriculture and see how you can use the local products in place. This is a comprehensive approach that we need to take. There's too much piecemeal things going on. And that's one of the major problems that we have here. Sir, thank you for your call. You've heard the theme. We really got to go. I'd like to thank Dr. Francis Chandler, Dr. Peter Laurie, of course, Mr. Busy Williams, Shane Lowe, June Fowler, and of course, Dr. Colin Alert for being guests on this special program today. I hope to do when next I'm here for Sunday Brass, more like these, to have more voices getting involved and speaking about what are some of the challenges that we're facing in Barbados from their perspective and basically how we can fix it. I think the more people are talking, the more people, those listening, could be informed, and I think better decision-making can come about. This is Sanka Price. Have a great day.